everybody. Welcome to a Tuesday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Russ alongside here as always until 3. CRISPR take over at that point. CRISPR Gabriel program to 5 tonight, and then it'll be the pregame. The Giants are in Denver. They will start the first of 3, a couple of night games, early evening for us. Just an hour difference, for goodness sake, in Colorado. Who am I kidding? Anyway, 5:40 first pitches tonight and tomorrow, 5 o'clock pregame shows. Bumgarner will go tonight, and then the teams will play in the afternoon, 12:10 our time on Thursday before the Giants head home. So we'll be preempted on Thursday this week. We'll move Daryl, and well, Marcus is already there, but move Daryl to Friday this week. We'll talk to Jackson tomorrow and today. Our usual lineup, Andrew will be up in a moment, and we'll talk to Stephen Tremblay. For us tonight, not only the Giants at 5 o'clock on 9:40, the A's and the Reds, 6:45, 7:05 first pitch from the Coliseum on our sister station, the Deuce 790. You mentioned that when the Giants and Reds wrapped up yesterday, you would have said, well, one of them's heading to the Bay Area. You would think it would be the Giants. No, the Giants go to Denver. The Reds come to the Bay Area. And also, I wanted to mention for us, we had talked yesterday, of course we have Bulldog baseball coming up over the weekend, we had talked about the Bulldogs trying to run the table the rest of the way and win the last 7, 6 of them in conference, 3 over the weekend, senior weekend coming up with San Diego State, and then wrap things up regular season-wise at UNLV the following weekend, and then off to the conference tournament in Reno. The game tonight, however, the non-conference game, part of that group of 7 against Cal State Bakersfield, has been canceled. Was supposed to be a 6 o'clock start at Biden-Bennett. It wasn't going to be on our air anyway, but it was going to be on Mountain West Network. There was going to be a digital offering. I'll talk to Stephen Tremblay at the end of the hour about the offerings for the week, as we do every Tuesday. But our sympathies and prayers out to the folks, Cal State Bakersfield Roadrunner program. The game was canceled today because Steve Farrington, one of their assistant baseball coaches, was involved in a very serious car accident yesterday. So, understandably, the game has been canceled tonight. So if you're planning to go out to watch Bulldogs and Roadrunners, there will not be a game tonight. Fresno State will play over the weekend. We don't have any update on Steve Farrington's condition. If we get that, we'll certainly mention it to you, and we know we have a lot of Bulldog fans who listen down in the South Valley. And also, they may be fans of Cal State Bakersfield, but we're talking about football-wise, etc. We hear from a lot of them, so we are definitely very much involved in seeing how Steve Farrington is, and if we can pass it along, we will. And again, our prayers out to everybody there, and a very tragic turn of events, that's for sure. But we hope it turns out okay. All right, that having been said, it's always an awkward transition back to sport, but we're going to do it right now and bring up our good friend Andrew Martin, the host of Bulldog Insider on Channel 24, sports director at 24 and 47. Andrew, how you doing?
Doing well, Tony. Yes, certainly some sad news coming out of Bakersfield, and we completely understand why that game was canceled. Disappointing, though, for Fresno State, because the Bulldogs are on a roll right now, coming off that weekend sweep at Nevada. The last thing that you want to do is have to stop that momentum, especially with a huge series against San Diego State this weekend. But again, we all, of course, understand the reason for the game being canceled tonight is just not ideal the way Fresno State is playing at the moment.
That is a very true statement, but within the context, it is, as you're referencing, a very easy choice to make in regard to canceling the game. I'm sure there was not one bit of hesitation from Terry Toomey and company. Also, yeah, tickets for tonight, they can be exchanged at the box office for any of the upcoming games over the weekend against San Diego State. The final 3 of the year for sure at Biden-Bennett. That's what we know, with the conference tourney being pegged for Nevada this year, for Reno, and with the team finishing at UNLV next weekend. And, of course, there won't be any kind of regional here in Fresno. If the Bulldogs can get through, and they may very well be the one seed right now, Bulldogs in very good shape to be the one seed. If they can get through the conference tourney, they will find themselves hopefully somewhere on the West Coast for the best of 4, and the four-teamer, the best with double elimination of what usually turns out to be 3 games, but it can be, in theory, 4 for a team. Actually, I guess, Andrew, technically you can get to five, right? And we talked about this in the format that's there. And I guess the good news is we have discussed, since they went to four to get your conference tourney underway, it does mimic exactly what happens the next week. Now, we haven't seen the Bulldogs in this mode since 2012. But, Andrew, I've been in favor of not only the conference limiting it to four, but I think it does help your pitching and your mindset that you go through what amounts to the regionals a week early, right?
You're talking about the conference tournament setting up the regionals, right, with the same format?
Yes. All intents and purposes, it's a precursor, but played the exact same way as the regional would be the next week. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I have no problem with that. And to be honest, I like it because, you know, one thing that I don't like that they do in basketball is invite every single team to Las Vegas. I mean, then you're talking about 22 teams, 11 men's teams, 11, you know, women's teams, when realistically, you know, there are only about maybe five, max, possibly six on each side that realistically have a chance to compete for a championship. So what are you doing? You're wasting people's time. You know, you're spending extra money to get them all there. You're assuming the fans are going to show up, but realistically, they may not, especially, you know, depending on how far some of the teams have to travel. I understand that they don't want to exclude anybody, but again, how many times is the Air Force women's basketball team going to compete for a championship? So I like the fact that in baseball, it's a little bit inclusive. I mean, if you don't finish in the top half of your conference, maybe you don't deserve to go to a conference, you know, tournament. We've seen Fresno State get left out of it. Well, you know what? Play better during the regular season, and you don't have to worry about it because, as we always say, you control how your season goes. So I'm totally fine with the format. From talking with Paul Leffler, I know that they're still trying to figure out what it's going to look like next year when Boise State officially adds baseball, and then the conference will have eight teams. There was talk, I think, that all eight teams would go, but I also think there's been talk that they would keep it at its current format, which I'm totally fine with. So, and if Fresno State ends up as the number one seed, then next year it'll be in Fresno, which is obviously, you know, good and something for the Bulldogs to shoot for to make the tournament again next year when they would get to host it.
A couple of things, Andrew. One, if you can move a little bit around, the cell is slightly muffled, not horribly muffled, but a little bit. So if you can kind of rearrange, we'll see if it'll help. The other thing is, my understanding for next year is you're going to see 21 games in conference, so everybody's going to play one three-game series against everybody else. That's how you'll get to 21, which will open you up for more non-conference games. And then you're right, they'll decide at the end of that year how it rolls over to a conference host chance the next year. What you're bringing up, by the way, you and I have had this discussion before, and you know this well. In basketball, I'm in lockstep with you, and I made this clear when it appeared a couple of years ago they were going to go ahead and knock the bottom three out and play just with eight for both the men and the women in Las Vegas, and that way, for the men in particular, they didn't have to deal with the internet games. Everything would have been CBS Sports Network in the quarterfinals and the semis, and then the mothership of CBS for the finals. They made the decision, as you know, that they were going to do that, and then they changed their mind at the last minute for the next year on the basis of a piece of logic that I don't agree with, which is, well, if you have 11 teams and they all know they're going to go, that way they get their tickets in advance. Andrew, as though people in San Jose are going to buy tickets in advance to go to Las Vegas to watch San Jose State. If people in San Jose were going to go, they were going to go to be in Las Vegas. It didn't matter whether the Spartans were playing or not. And that's kind of a leap of logic I wasn't prepared to take. They should have just gone with eight and left it at that. Feel the same way?
Well, yeah. And when it also comes to, you know, making your preparations and your travel plans for something like that, there are teams, you know, that probably know they're going to be one and done. So why would you really travel all the way there unless you wanted to spend an extra couple of days in Vegas? Then there are teams that get upset, like Nevada this past season when we thought the Wolfpack was going to win the conference. You know, I mean, there were certainly other contenders, Fresno State in that group, but to see Nevada not even make it to the championship game, if you're a fan of the Wolfpack, you probably, you know, bought, you know, hotel room and plane ticket accommodations through the weekend, not realizing that, guess what, you don't have to stay there through Saturday. So, I mean, I get it. There are things that you can't control, but you know if you're going there to support a team, you're going there expecting to see really good basketball, and ideally your team doesn't lose in the first, you know, in the first game. If you limit if you limit this tournament to, as you said, Tony, the first eight teams in the conference, so you chop off the bottom three, you know, all that does is it just puts, you know, all the games, you know, on display as better matchups and more compelling, you know, storylines, et cetera, rather than saying, okay, well, if there's a play-in game or, you know, a team that maybe would have upset in that first round and then, you know, gets dominated in the second round, you just get right to the good stuff. And I think nobody, with the exception of those teams that really want to say, well, we want to get one more chance to prove that we could run the table and win, you know, I guess for the lower seeded teams, it'd be four games, you know, four games in 4 days and actually make it to the NCAA tournament. But realistically, how often does that happen? It happens every, you know, once in a blue moon. I know Cal Poly did it in the Big West a few years ago, where I think they were 12-20 overall. They won their conference tournament and they got in, but very rarely does that happen. And when it does happen, you have teams that are frustrated because they say, look, I have the body of work and I put together, you know, this type of a season, you know, we should get in instead of that team. So there are arguments on both sides of the aisle for sure, but I would not have a problem with it if they just said, you know what, this way we don't have to worry about the hassle of accommodating 22 teams. Instead, we just make it 16. And let's face it, if you're not good enough to be in the top eight of your conference, do you really, really deserve, you know, to have a shot at that conference championship? Because you have all season to prove yourself.
And we'll move past this by saying you are correct, sir, and also it makes the regular season at least a little more interesting to know there is something at stake. There is relegation possible, if you will, if you don't make the top eight. That having been said, with baseball, Andrew, the more pertinent topic right now is the one I talked with Leffler about yesterday. The team is playing their best baseball at the moment. Is this team as structured as you view it? Good enough. We know it's good enough to win the conference, and that's regular season and the conference tourney. Is this team structured in a way that you think if they make a regional for the first time, really, well, you know, 2011 was the last time our hopes were really up. 2012 was a disappointment, but I didn't think they had quite enough up at Stanford. 2011 at UCLA, we felt they did. This team have that makeup that you think if they're in a regional, they have a chance to make a run here?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know, because in following this team this year, there have been some great stretches, you know, where Fresno State has played exceptional. There have been some stretches where the Bulldogs have struggled, and their lineup has come together very nicely. I think everyone's pleasantly surprised with McCarthy Tatum, you know, coming really out of nowhere to be the Bulldogs MVP at this point. I mean, the guy, unfortunately, has had so many surgeries, you know, didn't really get much playing time. His batting average was below the Mendoza line for the first couple of years. Now he's hitting roughly 350, you know, like in the 340s. So he's been phenomenal and really anchoring that middle part of the lineup. There are so many talented guys around him, though. Zach Ashford, Carter Binns, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Nolan Dempsey, you know, was just named the Mountain West Player of the Week. I mean, he's been having a great season. You know, they've incorporated some of the younger guys in the lineup, too. It's unfortunate they lost, you know, Higgins to an injury, and that was right after he got his first home run. Between, you know, Timian out there and Zach Presno, I mean, they've got a lot of good guys on this team. It's a really solid lineup. Pitching-wise, at the start of the season, aside from Ryan Jensen, we weren't really sure what to expect because, you know, last year's team lost a couple of really good pitchers that went to the draft that could have potentially come back, you know, Edgar Gonzalez being one of them. But I think the pitching has certainly come around. Davis Moore threw a complete game on Saturday against Nevada. He was named the Mountain West Pitcher of the Week. And between Jensen and even McCarthy Tatum, when you throw him out there on a Tuesday, they have talent at a lot of key positions. Clearly, it's good enough to keep up with and be, you know, right now the best in the Mountain West Conference. I could see Fresno State winning the conference tournament, Tony. I really can in a couple of weeks. I just don't know if this team is good enough to really make another run to a super regional or potentially the College World Series. And I say that because their non-conference schedule, they've struggled a little bit. And yes, they got that win over Cal State Fullerton when Fullerton was ranked 25th in the country. They went to Tennessee, and they were the first team to beat Tennessee this season, but they lost 2-3 in that series. Their hitters are definitely stronger than their pitchers at the moment. Not to say that you know, you can't be firing on all cylinders and, you know, have everybody turn on at the right time. I just right now think this team is good enough to win the conference tournament. Beyond that, it's kind of wait and see. But the nice thing is I don't think there will be any pressure on them to do so because, you know, they weren't picked to win the conference this year. So if they do that, they can just kind of go in there with their heads held high, being the latest crop of Bulldogs to win a conference championship. And then for the seniors, no matter what happens, they go out on a high note. For the juniors and sophomores, et cetera, they get experience heading into next season. But to answer your question, I don't know if this team is, in my mind, good enough to make a deep run. But then again, nobody saw 2008 coming, so never say never.
Yeah, you're right, except they've won only one NC2A postseason game since 2008. They haven't been near a super regional since that magical run in 08. We've talked about both sides of Cedar having, after national titles, their own particular brand of frustration. The softball team has not been to a super regional, period, because they did not have super regionals the last time the Bulldogs went to Oklahoma City, which was 99. They have had no success now in the 20-plus years nationally since their title, and the baseball team 10-plus years now, and they're also looking for another chance. One more time, if you're just tuning in, the game tonight against Cal State Bakersfield, non-conference scheduled for 6 o'clock, has been canceled. Steve Farrington, one of the assistant baseball coaches for Cal State Bakersfield, in a very serious car accident yesterday. So, again, our wishes and sympathies and prayers out to the Farrington family and the entirety of the folks at Cal State Bakersfield. Now, Andrew, I want to ask you quickly. I'll talk to Tremblay about this. Softball team doesn't look good for them right now, being swept at San Diego State. There is not a postseason conference tournament. We know it's more inclusive in softball. You don't have quite the depth you have in that particular bracket, so you can get in a little more easily, but I don't think Fresno State's going to get there. What say you?
To the NCAA tournament?
Yes.
No. I don't think the softball team has any shot of getting to the NCAA tournament. They've got a lot of wins this season. They're 33-18, I believe, but they don't really have any quality wins, or certainly enough quality wins to really merit being there. And they're right in the middle of the pack of the Mountain West Conference. Their shot of winning the Mountain West Conference pretty much went out the door when they got swept by Colorado State. I mean, that team has already clinched. Granted, we knew that was going to happen, but it is official that Colorado State is the Mountain West champion in softball. I know that the softball program has put in a bid to not only play in, but host that, the National Invitation Softball Championship. I believe it's the NIT, basically, for softball. So yeah, there's a chance that they could continue in postseason play. But, I would put their chances at 0% right now. Certainly getting swept by San Diego State over the weekend did not help things. They do have a couple of bright spots for next season. Mackenzie Wilson's one of the best freshmen in the country. They really need to figure out their pitching, though, because Linda Garza has used quite a few pitchers this season. I mentioned on Bulldog Insider a couple of weeks ago when Julie and I were talking about Haley Dolcini. She is the ace of that staff. But I know Danny East and Danielle Lung have been getting some experience in some games. And East had a really good season last year, and she even had that 15 strikeout no hitter in Albuquerque a year ago. But Haley Dolcini is the ace of that of that staff. But she doesn't have it every single night out there. They do have some talented seniors that they're going to be saying goodbye to this weekend. But the softball program winning 30 games again, that's now, what, 37, I think, straight years, maybe 38 straight years. I'm drawing a blank on the specific number of how many consecutive years that they've won 30 or more games. And that's terrific. That's incredibly difficult to do. But we know where the standard is for Fresno State softball. This is a program, as you just mentioned, that was used to, in the 90s, going to Oklahoma City every year. That certainly won a national championship in 1998. Even in the 2000s and early 2010s, they were still going to the NCAA tournament every year. They were in regionals and hosting, regionals a lot of the time under Margie Wright. You know, Tricia Ford was able to keep them at that level, and Linda Garza has the right mindset. They're just not quite at the level yet where they were and they would like to get back to. So you chalk it up as a learning experience. Hopefully they can do well this weekend. If they end up playing beyond this weekend, they get experience for next year, but I don't see them making the NCAA tournament this year.
They have good players still. They're a good team still. They are not a great team with great players anymore. That is the problem. softball team has, and whether it has to do with recruiting across the country, as we've talked over and over again, the economics where the moneyed aristocracy, the SEC, et cetera, they poured a bunch of money into their Olympic sports, and that's changed the dynamic, and some of the very talented California players are leaving to go other places. Whatever it might be, the difference between all those runs to a potential national title that finally cashed in 98 to now is they just do not have the great, great players across the board, the Amanda Scotts, local players like that, but the Laura Bergs, players from Southern California, Nina Lindenberg, these types of players, they don't have the depth they used to. That's why it isn't happening for them on the national scale. Hopefully that will, as you said, change as we move forward. All right, I want to ask you basketball-wise about Baker. It's a nice headline to have a guy leaving Kentucky. It's an L.A. native, somebody that Justin Hutson was familiar with when Baker went to Kentucky. But, Andrew, realistically, as opposed to what happened with Edwards, who was not just coming home to California, but coming home to Fresno, and the main competition was Nevada within conference, this situation with Baker is a guy who is not only from L.A., not from here, but he has a ton of Pac-12 schools after him. What are the odds that Baker ends up here?
They're probably small for the reason why you just said. I mean, the difference between him and Darryl Edwards is from Fresno. But you mentioned Nevada being the competition. There was no competition. He had committed.
Well, he was going to Nevada. Right? I'm just saying his landing place was within conference. This time, you've got a lot of Pac-12 schools knocking at the door.
Right. Well, Darryl Edwards is a good player. I don't know if he's a Pac-12 caliber player. He did, you know, obviously go to LSU and was in the SEC, but he wasn't really playing that much. And so the assumption is that he's, you know, certainly good enough to be in the Mountain West Conference and be a starter, you know, and a key contributor for the Bulldogs. But just to finish my quick point on that was he was committed to Nevada. The reason why he's in Fresno is because Eric Musselman left. If Musselman had not taken that Arkansas job, Darryl Edwards would be playing against Fresno State at least twice next season for Nevada. So certainly, you know, beneficial for the Bulldogs that Musselman left, and obviously a great get for Coach Hutson to get a local player, you know, to transfer back like he was able to get with Chris Seeley coming back from Utah, the Central High grad. In this instance, yeah, it'd be fantastic to get a player who, you know, who has Kentucky on his resume. But realistically, I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, it's nice that Fresno State's in the conversation. It shows you how much respect Coach Hutson and what his staff have already done are garnering at the national level. But realistically, I think Fresno State at this point is pretty much set with the team that it's going to have next season. You know, we talk about Noah Blackwell and Nate Grimes coming back and both being key contributors, and Edwards potentially sliding into that Deshaun Taylor role, being the leader, being the floor general, having – you know, Asan Juf on the floor, you know, and others certainly in the mix. I mean, Fresno State's going to be a good team next year. You know, you do have to replace, you know, Braxton Huggins, who was, you know, otherworldly in several games. Even though they only had him for one season, they're definitely going to miss his offensive output. But the cupboard's not bare, nor was it bare when Hutson first got here. So the goal is to keep that train rolling, and I don't necessarily think that losing out on a guy that they probably weren't going to get in the first place is really going to change things. So it's nice that Fresno State's in the conversation, but I don't really see it as a you know, as a likely possibility that they get him.
We'll see what happens. Hutson has had great success recruiting Southern California, and we've talked about this many times, and I realize different time and place and circumstance, but as Steve Fisher told us on air when Steve came on to recommend Justin for the job here, that it was Justin Hutson who saw Kawhi Leonard, who was not highly recruited. He wasn't unknown, but he wasn't someone that everybody across the country was trying to grab onto. And it was Justin Hutson who went to Steve Fisher and said, there's a guy playing in Los Angeles. We need to look at him. And Fisher said, if you say so, let's jump in the car and go take a look. That's how Kawhi Leonard ended up at San Diego State. Now, this is a different situation, I realize, and you are correct about the competition, but we've also learned not to underestimate Justin Hutson and his ability to recruit, particularly SoCal. Also, Andrew, good news that Orlando Robinson, in the final rankings coming up from 24/7, that, you know what, it continues to look like this as a real difference maker for Fresno State. That's got to be great news for this program.
Yeah, the more talented players that they can get, the more options it gives Coach Hudson, and the more excitement it brings to the fan base. Because, you know, the one thing that Fresno State has been trying to capture since the days of Jerry Tarkanian is continuous excitement and continuous winning. Rodney Terry was able to do a good job of, you know, keeping that, really starting that streak, but then keeping it alive of winning at least 20 games, you know, in a season. If Fresno State is able to get these types of caliber players on a consistent basis, then maybe it's not out of the realm of possibilities that they go out and schedule tough games, even if it means not getting a home game in return or doing two for ones like they've done with Oregon in the recent past. Because, you know, what is one of the big knocks on Fresno State basketball, that there aren't enough big-time opponents coming to the Safeway Center. And I understand. We all understand how difficult it is. You're not getting a Duke. You're not getting a Kentucky, or a Michigan State or Michigan, you know, et cetera, to come to the Safeway Center and play Fresno State. But if one of those programs, is already traveling out west for maybe a tournament in L.A., maybe a tournament in Hawaii, and they can kind of stop off and play a game, Fresno State was willing to do that a couple of years ago when the Bulldogs went to Cancun. You know, they went to Arkansas and played a game in Fayetteville. Coach Terry was able to schedule road games, you know, in where'd they go? They went to Des Moines, Iowa, right? I mean, that's something that's not out of the realm of possibilities, and it would not only up the profile of the program, but also if the Bulldogs can win some of those games, if they have, you know, players that are incredibly talented on the team, then it just generates more excitement, and then they might be able to, in the future, get some of those games as a return, because other teams would not necessarily see it as just a lose-lose situation for them if they come to Fresno and lose that game. So I don't know, you know, ultimately what it's going to take for Fresno State to really get back into the national landscape, aside from just consistent winning. But these are all little pieces, like little pebbles in the road that can basically be paved over as they keep going in the direction they're going in. So I don't know much about Orlando Robinson other than what I've read and the stuff that Jackson's written about him. But if he's as talented as everybody says, then he's just another notch on the belt for the Bulldogs, and somebody who hopefully the fan base can get to know and can dominate like some of the other players they have in the program.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, I want to move to football here in the few minutes we have. We talked about the schedule last week. Our good buddy David emailed in. I addressed this yesterday with Paul. I want to do the same with you. I was talking at the end of last week with Jackson, and I'll talk to Jackson tomorrow. The Giants schedule obviously moves Jackson's visit around on a weekly basis. But about this lineup, Andrew and I had said after the first two games of the year at SC and then home to Minnesota, the schedule scopes out in a way that as this team matures, and it's going to have to because you have a lot of very talented but inexperienced guys, you lost so many of your starters to graduation, that this team has that cluster of games from the end of September through October that are highly winnable. Then you get to the stretch run in November, and the team should be playing at its optimum. You know, David said it's probably a little optimistic to talk about a double-digit win season. Andrew, I still think that 10 wins could be in the future for this program. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's certainly doable. It absolutely is doable because you lose, and we've talked about this before, Tony, you lose, you know, more than 30 guys from last year's team, but realistically, you know, more than half of those guys were not significant contributors. I mean, yes, losing your quarterback, yes, losing, you know, Keyshawn Johnson, Jeff Allison, Mike Bell, like those are huge losses that you're not readily just going to slide somebody in there and say, okay, you're talented, you're next man up. I mean, that's the goal and that's the hope. And there are some talented players, you know, that definitely are going to have expanded roles this season. But at the same time, there are guys who were back that did, you know, contribute significantly last year. I mean, Juju Hughes, you know, is most likely going to be a captain on this team. I mean, he's just a phenomenal guy, great athlete, has been phenomenal for the Bulldogs since he came here as a freshman at a Hanford High. He's back. Michael Walker decided not to enter his name into the NFL draft, and seeing what happened with Jeff Allison and Mike Bell – turns out to be an incredibly smart decision, he's back, and he's going to, you know, move from defensive end to linebacker. You've got some young guys that you're, you know, that you're bringing in at wide receiver, but they're incredibly talented. You know, Jalen Cropper, for example, coming in directly from Buchanan, he will make an impact. Still to be seen exactly what his role is going to be on this team, but he could play a number of different positions. You know, you've got Ronnie Rivers back there at running back, and when he's healthy, he has had a couple of injuries, you know, to deal with over his career, but when he's healthy, he's your MVP. You know, I mean, he was phenomenal in the bowl game. He scored the winning touchdown in the Mountain West Championship game. We know what he can do with the football, and he's a legacy, of course, following in the footsteps of his father. There are numerous talented players on this team, so I think Fresno State's going to be just fine, and we've also talked, you know, about how the schedule sets up for the Bulldogs. Going to USC is always tough, you know, and there's no guarantee that they're going to win that game, but they're catching USC at a time when the Trojans are, you know, on a downward spiral, so maybe they can win that game. You know, I mean, they should definitely beat Sacramento State and New Mexico State non-conference. No reason to think that they won't be competitive against Minnesota. They don't have to face Boise State in conference. I mean, really, their two tough conference games are Utah State at home and San Diego State on the road. And I think Fresno State can easily win at the minimum 8 to 9 games this season. I think 10 is within, you know, certainly within the realm of possibilities. I don't want to project more than that because it is still difficult, obviously, when you lose a lot of players. And there are teams around the conference that, you know, that are better than they were last year. We just don't know that yet because it's still too early. But I think that Fresno State can keep this train, you know, rolling. The one thing that's frustrating, though, from a media person's, you know, standpoint is I don't like Friday games, and I've said this before, too. I know I'm not the only one. I know the coaching staff doesn't like Friday games. We all understand why there are Friday games, because it's attractive for TV purposes. You know, and since Fresno State had a great season last year, we knew that it was more than just a possibility. We figured one game would be moved off, but to have the – I'm actually kind of surprised that Fresno State UNLV is attractive enough for a Friday night. The Bulldogs are attractive. I don't know if the Rebels are attractive for a Friday night. But Fresno State's best game this season is against San Diego State, so that one was almost a given that was going to be moved to a Friday night. But from the high school, you know, scene perspective, it's tough because, you know, for us, we have to split our coverage on those nights. For the coaches, it means they don't get a chance to actually, you know, pay attention to the high school kids and the high school recruits because they have a game that they have to worry about, not to mention the fact that they've got a short week to prepare. So I'm not a huge fan of Friday night games. I know that most people are not, but, again, we know why that's done. I think the Fresno State can have another good season this year. Maybe not 12 wins, maybe not 10 wins, but I think they'll be pretty close. I think they will.
And that San Diego State game, you're right, on a Friday. You have one home date, one road date. The good news about that Friday, it will be the feature game on ESPN. So when they play San Diego State, they'll have a lot more eyeballs on it than the late Saturday night starts on CBS Sports Network, which has been the case with the Aztecs the last couple of years. Andrew, you brought up the situation with Bell. I talked to Paul about it yesterday a little bit. I don't want to get into what happened with Bell. We've talked about the measurables as far as his physical characteristics. He is the prototypical guy in your defensive backfield, the difference maker. He has the size, but his stats from the combine weren't great pro day. But beyond that, what is your point of view given letting guys, if they're not drafted, come back to school? Do you have any issue at all, Andrew, with saying, okay, if you don't have an agent, you can go through the process, go through the draft, and if you're not drafted, it can't be because you didn't like where you're drafted, but if you're not drafted, you have every right to come back. Are you in line with that?
I would be okay with that as long as they don't sign with an agent. And we've seen this, you know, transition in the NBA where a guy like Deshaun Taylor, for example, could put his name into the ring to get into the NBA draft, but then decide, you know what, I'm going to come back. And he did come back to Fresno State, and the Bulldogs were better for it. You know, the tough part right now is Jeff Allison and Mike Bell, you know, are both, Allison signed an undrafted free agent deal with the Jets. Bell was with the Packers, you know, on a rookie deal. Have not heard what the latest with that is, but I'm assuming they didn't get signed. And now their futures are just, you know, very murky. They're very cloudy and up in the air. Whereas if they didn't get drafted and could come back to Fresno State or even, you know, go up until the draft and then once they went through the combine process realize, you know what, our numbers weren't that great. Maybe we do need some more seasoning. They would just come back and make Fresno State better. You don't think Jeff Tedford, you know, would absolutely love to have those guys back on his team? You don't think those guys, after knowing that they didn't get drafted, would love to come back, help the Bulldogs, spend one more year in college, get degrees, and then enter the NFL NFL draft next year, knowing exactly what they would need to do to improve on all their measurables at both the combine and pro day. It's a lose-lose situation for Fresno State and for those guys right now, because they don't know what they're going to do, and the Bulldogs have to replace them. So, yes, I have no problem, because that strengthens college football as a whole if all the underclassmen, and there were almost 50 underclassmen, I think, that didn't get drafted. So what do those guys do? Because they can't come back. They don't have degrees, and now they have to figure out what's going to happen with the rest of their lives. It's tough. I would welcome them back. I'd have no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any particular inherent advantage that is gained for a player going through the process other than knowing where he stands in the league as far as coming back. Doesn't make Bell or Allison, again, both may have decided they wanted to go the free agent route if they weren't drafted anyway, but I'm just saying, as far as saying they're going to be better players just because they went through the combine and you have an unfair advantage, absolutely not. There's nothing about that. That's a personal deal. That's all there is to it. Andrew, one last thing. Marcus McMarion, he had the two rookies that were signed by the Raiders. Neither was McMarion, so he is off to another opportunity. New Orleans Saints at this point. What about McMarion? Is he going to make it XFL somewhere else, Canada? What's going to happen with Marcus, do you think?
I love Marcus McMarion. I covered him when he got his first start at Dinuba High School, back in, what year was that now? 2011, I want to say. I mean, I remember him when he was a high school player, and he was a dual-threat guy being recruited by all these schools. Boise State was really high on him back when Chris Peterson was still the coach. They really, really wanted Marcus McMarion. He came close to signing with Boise State. Great guy, had a great attitude, was certainly a great quarterback for Fresno State, but just because you're a great quarterback in college doesn't necessarily mean that you will be a great quarterback at the next level. And unfortunately, as great as McMarion was for the Bulldogs, he was just what they needed. He's just not an otherworldly talent like Derek Carr is. And that's not a knock on McMarion, because, again, a lot of players, who were standouts in college don't necessarily, have the lengthy pro careers that they would like. I do think that there is a football future out there for McMarion. I don't think it's in the NFL, but if, the XFL is a possibility, possibly the CFL, and he'd be willing to go there, I think that he can be successful and he can make a nice little niche for himself. We certainly wish him, all the best. And I believe New Orleans, right? He's going to the Saints for yes. Another workout this weekend. All you have to do is just, put some good routes, put some good film out there that somebody likes and gives you an opportunity. But McMarion's a really smart guy. He has a degree. He actually has a couple of degrees. He's somebody that will be successful in life no matter what he does. And if he never picks up a football after this weekend again, he can live with himself knowing that, he did exactly what he set out to do, and that was help with the resurgence of Fresno State football. He came in, right before the 2017 season, didn't play right away, was patient when he took over for Chase and Virgil. All he did was lead the Bulldogs to a 21-4 record in his season plus as the quarterback, with a conference championship, couple of bowl wins, and a lot of memories. And so I would love to say that McMarion will absolutely be, an NFL player. But to be honest, I don't even know if Keyshawn Johnson is guaranteed to be an NFL player. He'll have a chance, and certainly everybody who gets their foot in the door will have a chance. It's just so difficult. The numbers are so against everybody, which is why, we as a society revere athletes and pay athletes so much money, because it's difficult to do what they do. It's so hard to be on that path, and it's really hard to maintain that success. Even if you make it, your careers only last a couple of years on average, because it is so difficult to do what they do on a consistent basis for that long. So as much as I would love to see McMarion, be great at the next level, my gut tells me that his best football days are probably behind him, but that's nothing to sneeze at. He was great for Fresno State, and he's a really good guy. Certainly wish him the best in whatever he does, but I don't think that the NFL is the right path for him.
We'll see what happens. XFL looks like it's going to be a very viable league, or at least has a better chance than any other startup league has had in a while. We'll see how it plays out. TV contract looks pretty good. Andrew, appreciate it. Have a great remainder of the week. Look forward to the Insider on Sunday. Take care.
All right. Sounds good, Tony. Yeah, we sent Julia and Scott actually both went to Hanford yesterday to do the Will and Dennis Springer story. Will Springer's a standout at Sierra Pacific. His dad's one of the coaches and obviously, you know, pitched in the bigs and was a Fresno State Bulldog. So got a really good feature story coming this Sunday.
6 o'clock, Channel 24. I'll see you, my friend. Take care.
All right. Have a good one, Tony.
All right, guys. Andrew Martin, we'll take a break. Come back with Stephen Tremblay. Get a little bit of digital media update at Fresno State for you before the hour wraps up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back to 48 here until 3. CGP 3 to 5. Giants on 940, 5 o'clock. Pre-game 540 first pitch from Coors Field in Denver. Over on our sister station, the Deuce 790, the A's are back home to play the Reds, who had to fly all the way back from Cincinnati after wrapping up the Giants series to California. Coliseum tonight, 7:05 first pitch. Also, we mentioned earlier our prayers and sympathies out to the Cal State Bakersfield baseball team. They were scheduled to play at Biden-Bennett tonight at 6 o'clock, but Steve Farrington, one of their assistant coaches, in a very serious traffic accident yesterday. So quite understandably, both schools have decided not to play today. So our thoughts and prayers with our good friends down at Cal State Bakersfield, in particular Steve Farrington and his family. One other note, Paul George, we knew that Paul was really suffering from that shoulder injury. He went from MVP caliber play to just trying to get through the playoffs, which ended too soon for the folks in OKC. Paul George underwent rotator cuff surgery today to repair a partially torn tendon in his right shoulder, so he'll be out at least through the start of preseason training camp. That's how quickly the season comes back around, because it starts again in October when it finally mercifully ends sometime in mid to late June. And George also will have a procedure done to correct a small tear in the labrum on his left shoulder, so we hope things go okay for our great friend. And he had a great year going and really continued to play well throughout all the pain, but it was a tough deal, and we see now the extent of the damage, so we hope that the rehab goes well. All right, guys, chance right now to talk to our good friend Stephen Tremblay, primary contact for Bulldog Men's Basketball and also the director of new media, digital media at Fresno State. Stephen, how you doing?
Doing great, Tony. How are you?
Doing just fine, Stephen. We have about 3 minutes here. I want to ask you quickly about the softball team. Is it over for them in regard to the NC2As, in your opinion?
I don't see a path. There's always, depending on a sweep over a team that's in the top 35, could potentially give you an outside chance. RPI in the 73 as of today really need to be in that low 40s to have any kind of consideration. So there's always outside hope, and there are other factors besides that RPI that come into play. Especially sometimes, I mean, when you've got a strong conference like the Mountain West is this year, with four teams in the top 50, six in the top 80, being first or second in that league, that first is not an option at this point. Second isn't even an option, but a third place finish is still potentially an option. So that would be your best shot.
And then as far as the TV coverage, you have teams home this weekend. How are you guys handling things?
Both baseball and softball will be on the Mountain West Network picking up the simulcasts, except for Friday. There's no simulcast for softball, so Matt Norville will still be on the call. So Matt Norville will be at Margie Wright Diamond, and Paul Leffler will be at Pete Biden Field at Bob Bennett Stadium.
And then I mentioned the situation tonight. For those that had tickets, those can be exchanged for any of the games over this
weekend. Any of the three games this weekend. And it's primarily our season ticket holders. There are a few people that have purchased for a single game on a Tuesday. But if you have any of those tickets, you can exchange those for any of the three games at baseball this weekend.
Good enough. And then the last minute here, any update at all that we need to know going into the week or the week past as we get ready for the conference tourney?
I mean, for baseball, I mean, really in a strong position in that top 50, that's extra consideration as a regular season champion if you're able to win the regular season.
Right.
If you don't win the tournament, the committee will look at that. And then having an opportunity to play San Diego State and UNLV, two of the better teams in the conference, RPI-wise. And then just quickly before, I know we have to go, but track and field is over at Veterans Memorial over in Buchanan, and it's a great opportunity to see our teams competing. You can watch that digitally. That's through Flow Track, though. So it is a $12.50 subscription, which is the lowest plan.
Good enough. Stephen, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, guys, Stephen Tremblay. And before we wrap things up here to get the final break, I want to mention one more time, as we did throughout last week, our good friend Gary Cook and his son Ryan, very much involved. The fundraiser for Mason Frulli, an 11-year-old who had his brain cancer tumors very tragically return. There is an event on June 15th at Lake McClure called Fishing McClure for Mason to help pay the medical bills. We hope you get involved in that. Go to Facebook and enter in Fishing McClure for Mason, or email me directly at tdad1@att.net. I'll get you all the information, everything from Facebook to GoFundMe to Ryan's phone number to Gary's email. All of that is available, tdad1@att.net. We'll take a break, wrap things up on 5000 Watt 940 ESPN.